Today's Srimad Bhagavatam, beginning of the eighth chapter of Canto 6. There's a lot of verses without purports, so what I suggest is that I just read and you listen, you know, attentively, I guess, because it's the Bhagavatam. All the verses until we reach, I think, verse 7 or 8, where there's a purport, and then we can read that verse together, Sanskrit, English-wise. So this chapter is entitled the Narayan Kavacha Shield. Interestingly, it's a shield made of sound, emphasizing this point that our tradition is very much a sound-based tradition. There's actually a devotee in the United States whose academic name is Beck. I forget his first name. And he wrote a book called Sonic Theology. And he traces back the whole history of, you know, chanting the Maha Mantra, as we're seeing in contemporary, you know, bhakti circles, all the way back to the most ancient Vedas, and establishing this fact that the Vedic tradition, or Hinduism, you know, quote unquote, has been always a primarily sonic, sound-based tradition, as opposed to many people who, you know, teach about Hinduism and, you know, make a big deal or emphasize the visual, you know, the paintings, the deity worship, and so on. Not to say that those things are not absolute and, you know, transcendental, but in terms of importance, we certainly place a lot of emphasis on sound, on sacred sound, on transcendental sound vibration, right? And we see that right here in this chapter. The whole chapter is about this shield that protects one from enemies, and this shield is made from sound, from names of God. So I'll just read. Maybe we could follow along on the board. Just the English until we reach the verse with the purport. Is that okay? King Parikshit inquired from Shukadev Goswami, "My Lord, kindly explain the Vishnu Mantra armor that protected King Indra and enabled him to conquer his enemies, along with their carriers, and enjoy the opulence of the three worlds. Please explain to me that Narayan armor by which King Indra achieved success in battle, conquering the enemies who were endeavoring to kill him." Sri Shukadev Goswami said, "King Indra, the leader of the demigods, inquired about the armor known as Narayana Kavacha from Vishvarupa, who was engaged by the demigods as their priest. Please hear Vishvarupa's reply with great attention." Vishvarupa said, "If some form of fear arises, one should first wash his hands and legs clean and then perform Ashman by chanting this mantra, Om apavitra pavitro va saravashtam katupi va yak smarit pundarika aksham sabhayantara suchihi Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu. Then one should touch kusha grass and sit gravely and silently facing north. When completely purified, one should touch the mantra composed of 8 syllables to the 8 parts of his body, and touch the mantra composed of 12 syllables to his hands. Thus, in the following manner, he should bind himself with the Narayan coat of armor. First, while chanting the mantra composed of 8 syllables, Om Namo Narayana, Narayanaya, beginning with the pranava, the syllable Om, one should touch his hands to 8 parts of his body, starting with the 2 feet and progressing systematically to the knees, thighs, abdomen, heart, chest, mouth, and head. Then one should chant the mantra in reverse, beginning from the last syllable, ya, while touching the parts of his body in the reverse order. These 2 processes are known as Utpati Nyasa and Samhara Nyasa, respectively." We see some of that when devotees apply tilak. I mean, those devotees who apply tilak in 12 places, you see this similarity, this resemblance here in this verse. Text 7. Then one should chant the mantra composed of 12 syllables, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Preceding each syllable by the Omkara, one should place the syllables of the mantra on the tips of his fingers, beginning with the index finger of the right hand and concluding with the index finger of the left. The four remaining syllables should be placed on the joints of the thumbs. One must then chant the mantra of 6 syllables, Om Vishnave Namaha. One should place the syllable Om on his heart, the syllable V on the top of his head, the syllable Sha between his eyebrows, the syllable Na on his tuft of hair, Shikha, and the syllable V between his eyes. The chanter of the mantra should then place the syllable Na on all the joints of his body and meditate on the syllable Ma as being a weapon. He should thus become the perfect personification of the mantra. Thereafter, adding Visarga to the final syllable Ma, he should chant the mantra Maha Astraya Fat in all directions, beginning from the east. In this way, all directions will be bound by the protective armor of the mantra. And I think there's only one more verse without a purport. After finishing this chanting, one should think himself qualitatively one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is full in 6 opulences and is worthy to be meditated upon. Then one should chant the following protective prayer to Lord Narayan, the Narayan Kavacha. So this is it. Let's see how it goes. Om Hari. Does anyone know the melody? Om Hari Vidyan Nama Sarvagraksha Yastangri Padma Padavi. Om Harir Vidyayan Mama Sarvaraksham Nyastangri Padma Patagendra Prishte Dharari Charma Sigadeshu Chapa Pashandadano Shtaguno Stabahu. So please repeat after me. Let's just read the translation. We only have 20 minutes left. The Supreme Lord, who sits on the back of the bird Garuda, touching him with his lotus feet, holds 8 weapons: the conch shell, disc, shield, sword, club, arrows, bow and ropes. May that Supreme Personality of Godhead protect me at all times with his 8 arms. He is all powerful because he fully possesses the 8 mystic powers, anima, lagima, etc. So Srila Prabhupada's purport for this verse: thinking oneself one with the Supreme is called ahangropasana. Through ahangrahopasana, one does not become God, but he thinks of himself as qualitatively one with the Supreme. Understanding that as a spirit soul he is equal in quality to the Supreme Soul, the way the water of a river is of the same nature as the water of the sea, one should meditate upon the Supreme Lord as described in this verse and seek his protection. This is the point about protection. The living entities are always subordinate to the Supreme Lord, or to the Supreme, sorry. Consequently, their duty is to always seek the mercy of the Lord in order to be protected by him in all circumstances. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Agyanati Menandasyaganjana Shalakayakshakshurun Militam Jinatasma Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, but my spiritual master opened my eyes. With the torchlight of knowledge, I offer my respectful obeisances unto his lotus feet. Give me 1 second, please. Okay, here we go. So the theme of this lecture, if we want Krishna's protection, if you want the protection of God, God will give us his protection. Right. Depending on us, if we desire God to protect us, God will protect us. Right. When I was preparing for the class, I was thinking, okay, what story can I tell about my own life? Starting with this model of the lecture, you start with I, right? I was explaining yesterday, that relates to this theme of protection. Like something in my life that occurred in my devotional life where I genuinely felt deep down that, it must be Krishna's protection. So as I was thinking, you know what? I have certain examples, but these examples sometimes they're kind of private, in the sense that a lot of times I think Krishna protected me from, engaging in sinful activities or in a lifestyle that is not dharmic or that is not very worth being proud of. So then I realized, I don't think I can give details of of these personal incidents in my life where Krishna protected me, because it would be embarrassing to speak about them in public, right? And I think all of us can testify to that Krishna, God has protected us from falling down. That's a term you hear, and we have a relatively newcomer here in our midst. There's a gentleman sitting there, so you'll get used to ISKCON lingo. Like specific words, gamsha, blooping, falling, samosa, falling down. So falling down, means like falling down from a platform of following a certain standard of moral principles and a certain sadhana, a certain spiritual practice. Fortunately, Krishna is very merciful, and he says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 9th chapter, verse 30-something, apichet duracharo bhajate mam ananyavak sadureva samantavya samyak vyavahitosi hisa, that even if one commits the most abominable activity, one is still to be considered saintly because he is rightly situated in his determination. So the theme of falling down and picking oneself up and continuing one's devotional service in spite of hiccups on the path of bhakti yoga is a very important theme in our tradition. But anyway, coming back to my point, I think we can all identify with this theme of protection. Right? Have we felt Krishna's protection in the months or years that we're practicing Krishna consciousness? Please say yes if you agree or nod your right. So protection from God is a theme that all spiritualists, especially all monotheists, who believe in a personal God, as we do, can identify with, right? So the question then comes up, okay, protection, that's fine, but what kind of protection are we talking about? What kind of protection? Sometimes you hear certain religious rhetoric or speech whereby the propaganda or the rhetoric is that if one, worships God, one will get very, very clearly very material results. And there were these televangelical preachers, in the United States. They have these Sunday programs on the TV, Just put your hand on the screen and pray to Jesus and you will get that new car. But send the donation too, Prosperity theology, it's called. The idea that, you worship God clearly for material improvement and you will get it. Because as Prabhupada would say, God is the order supplier. But we see in our lives that sometimes or many times, you know, a devotee of Krishna may not necessarily get all his or her body related wishes, especially the extravagant ones, granted. And in a greater sense, one can say, well, you know, how is God protecting me? I just got cancer. How is God protecting me? My husband got killed in Iraq. Prabhupada used the example of World War II, and he often uses this example when Prabhupada talks about how he liked the example that apparently after World War II, many women in Germany became atheists because many of their husbands never returned from the war. And so there was this like psychological reaction that, you know, I don't believe in God anymore because, you know, God didn't protect my husband. So the kind of protection that God provides us is first and foremost, not to say that he doesn't care for our material life, material body. As a matter of fact, Krishna does say, for those who are constantly devoted to me, I preserve what they have and I provide what they lack. But since we're operating in a paradigm wherein the premise is that we are not our physical bodies, we are spiritual beings inside physical bodies, and therefore that God sees us as who we actually are, namely souls. I mean, wouldn't it be horrible if, you know, we are trying our whole life practicing sadhana to get off the bodily platform of life, as we say, which is not to say that we artificially renounce the world and we become, you know, we reject the world. That's not what we mean by this. It's very important. Yuktavai, real renunciation, as opposed to, you know, oh, the world is illusion and we reject it. But having said that, imagine, you know, we practice all these years to try to get off the bodily platform, right, to identify as souls. And then all the while, you know, God is like making a mistake and seeing us as our physical body. that would be kind of depressing. So given that the foundation of our philosophy is Aham Brahmasmi, Jivera Sarub Hoy, Krishnera Nityadas, I am not my body, I am an eternal soul. By the way, Sridhar Swami, who used to preach here a lot before he left his body, said that he was in a class where Prabhupada said that when the curtains open during a Bhagavatam class, you do not have to necessarily bow to the floor. You can just fold your hands, that's enough. It's a short trivia coming directly from the jolly Swami, Sridhar Maharaj. For those of us who remember him, he's very friendly, right? Joyous Canadian disciple of Prabhupada. There's this devotee in Philadelphia. He's an African-American, black devotee. And he often tells people, especially devotees, with that sort of, you know, American black accent. He goes, excuse me, can you please step out of your body? I said, step out of your body. I want to talk to you soul to soul. I want to talk to you soul to soul. Step out of your body. I want to talk to you soul to soul. So if we operate in the paradigm that we are not our bodies, that we are souls, and we actually have nothing to do ontologically with our physical covering, then logically it follows that God sees us in that light as well. And therefore, the protection that God gives us must, by logic and definition, be spiritual in nature. Right? So that's what we're talking about in terms of protection. We're talking about, you know, spiritual protection. The father of the guru of Srila Prabhupada is a great saint in our tradition. We believe his name is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And in one of his numerous poems in which he describes the process of surrender, into six different limbs, right? One of these limbs of surrender is what he calls Avashya Rakshibe Krishna Vishvas Palan, which means the faith, the implicit faith that Krishna or God will protect me under all circumstances. Let me read to you a letter, a passage from a letter that Prabhupada wrote to one of his disciples called Vishvadharini, a lady, in 1977. It's just three or four lines. Listen to this. Prabhupada says, "Our strength is in following the regulative principles and chanting 16 rounds of japa. Then Krishna will give you protection. We don't believe in material protection, like so-called family, friends." And then Prabhupada quotes a famous verse from the second canto, "Dehapatya kalatradishu atmasanyesho sashtapi tesham pramato nidanam pashyan apina pashyati." And the translation, he provides a translation. The translation of the second canto verse is, quote, "Persons who are devoid of atma tattva." What is atma tattva? Atma means soul. Tattva means truth, categorical truth, knowledge of the soul and of God and so on. So persons who are devoid of atma tattva do not inquire into the problems of life. What are the essential problems of life? Four. Repeated birth and death. Yeah, birth, death, and then there's two other lovely ones in between. Old age and disease. You know, as devotees of Krishna, we kind of reduce all the problems of the world to basically four things that kind of suck. Excuse my language. It's not a bad word, but not very polite. Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi. Birth, death, old age, disease. Enough to spoil your party. So those who are who are devoid of atma tattva do not inquire, like, why do I have to die? Why do I have to grow old? Why is death forced upon me? Why am I even born? We were speaking about Sarvatma yesterday. There's this senior devotee called Sarvatma Prabhu, wonderful kirtan singer and a very senior disciple of Ridayananda Maharaj. Now, I'll tell you this quick story, one time he borrowed money from his guru, from Ridayananda Maharaj. He borrowed like several thousand dollars. Like, he said, you know, "Guru Maharaj, I need money, can you please lend me?" So, you know, it's not really the thing to do. So Ridayananda Maharaj said, "Okay, I'm here." And he gave him like $2,000 or $3,000. They had a long-standing relationship. He took initiation from him in 1978 or something so. And this was maybe 10, 20, 15 years ago. Anyway, months elapsed, and you know, the disciple did not give any, you know, didn't pay back his guru. So one day, Sarvatma was driving Ridayananda Maharaj to a home program or to a temple, and then Ridayananda Maharaj said, "Hey, Sarvatma," and Sarvatma said, "Yes, Guru Maharaj." "Sarvatma, don't you owe me money?" And then Sarvatma said, "Guru Maharaj, it is known by everyone that the conclusion of the Vedic scriptures is that the disciple can never repay the debt to the spiritual master." And he made his spiritual master laugh, and which is auspicious, and of course he paid him back later on. So why am I bringing... I thought of Sarvatma for some reason, and now I just remember his funny story. Yeah, atma tattva, devoid of atma tattva. So those who are devoid of atma tattva, I have no idea how I got to this joke, but anyway, they don't inquire. Huh? Yeah, he's a good kirtaniya, but how is that related to not... Oh, he gave this analogy once. Thank you. Like, imagine you wake up from a dream, from sleep. Imagine you wake up from sleep one day. You know, you go to sleep, you put on your Vedic pajamas, and, you know, you take rest. And then the next morning you wake up and you're like in a tennis outfit on the grass central court of Wimbledon. And you open your eyes and there's like, you know, 5, 10,000 spectators, you know, looking at you. Logically, you would get up and you would wonder, like, how the heck did I, like, what happened? Not that you would, like, well, okay, well, here's the racket. You would just get up and take the racket and start serving and playing the match. You would ask, like, how am I here? But most of us don't even think, like, why am I here? And if we do ask, then we have atheistic modern scientists who don't believe in intelligent design and who, you know, provide us a Darwinian idea of evolution based on chance, right? So, the four problems of life, birth, death, old age, disease, Prabhupada continues, the verse continues, excuse me. So people who are devoid of Atmatattva, they do not inquire into problems of life, being too attached, and this is important with the theme of protection, being too attached to the fallible soldiers. The difference between fallible and infallible. What does the word fallible mean? Something that fails. Something that won't last. Fallible. So a fallible soldier, which the Bhagavatam describes as the body, starting with the body and expansions of the body, the children, the wife, the husband. The Bhagavatam describes these as fallible soldiers. Does this mean that we don't take care of the body? No. Does it mean that nobody gets married? No. Does that mean that we shouldn't have children? No. Does that mean that we have no loving feelings for our family relations? No. However, in a purely philosophical sense, we understand that our husband or our wife or our children, our king or our president, are all just like us, souls who are also in temporary physical bodies who are going to die. And they really can't provide us the protection, the spiritual protection that only God can provide. Or that God's devotees. So if your husband or your wife or your children are devotees, they surely can give you spiritual protection. The verse finishes, although sufficiently experienced, still they do not see their inevitable destruction. That's the point. Like our fallible soldiers, including our own body, you know, gets like, dies ultimately. So Prabhupada continues, and he finishes this letter to this lady, to this devotee, Vishvadharini. He says, we strongly believe in Krishna's protection. Real spiritual protection is firm faith in Krishna. So go on with your real life as Krishna's devotee. Go on with your real life as Krishna's devotee. Right? So, you know, you may say again, like we said at the beginning, but, you know, is Krishna really protecting me? And remember, Krishna's here to help you spiritually. Krishna's here to help you go back to Him. Krishna, we could fairly say, doesn't care all that much about you having, you know, a wonderful, wonderful, sweet, lovely, completely satisfying experience in material life. Otherwise, why would He say that, well, this world is an unhappy place full of sorrow? He defines this world. It's like, imagine, you know, you create a world, you stamp it as a place of suffering, as a place of sorrow, where people are sad and cry, and it's temporary, and then says, you know, I wish you all the best, and let me help you so that it can have, you know, you can have a wonderful experience. It doesn't make sense. So we're stuck in a world where, no matter how you cut the cake, as they said, you know, our happiness is always like sand in the sweet rice. You know, sweet rice. Have you eaten sweet rice before? So imagine someone puts some sand in the sweet rice. It's, you know, you can't get that perfect taste because there's sand in the sweet rice. So when you are suffering, you can think, okay, well, actually, Krishna is still protecting me somehow. And you know what's a really good technique to be able to meditate on this better? It's to recite this verse from the 10th canto, which Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Devotion should be the motto of all devotees. The famous Tateno kampam susamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vipakam rinvagva purbir vidadannamaste jivetayo mukti padesadaya bhak. Does that ring a bell, this verse, the Tateno kampam verse? Yes, anybody? Yeah, Brahma's prayers. Brahma says, my dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions to his past misdeeds, and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, body, and words, inherits the kingdom of God because it has become his rightful claim. I used to recite this verse all the time at the Los Angeles airport when I was distributing books as a brahmachari, because it was so difficult to approach these really, materially successful, temporarily with really good karma, so-called, people who would just have no interest in stopping when you try to give them a Bhagavad Gita. And then you would feel, people would say no and no and no all day long, like no, wouldn't even stop for you. It was really like humiliating, really humbling. So I would take shelter of this verse, Tateno kampam susamikshamano bunjana evatma. And so this applies to us when we're experiencing suffering in life, whether it's a relationship related suffering, whether it's health related, whether it's financial related, whether it has to do with the name, reputation related. When you're suffering, you should think, as Brahma is thinking, that actually, if it wasn't for God's mercy, I should be suffering this exact thing that I'm suffering right now. I should be suffering it way more. So, among devotees, you often hear like, well, I cut my finger. If I wasn't a devotee of God, I would have my whole arm chopped off. Like, according to my karma, if it was really tit for tat, like action reaction, I should be getting, my arm cut off. But because I'm trying to serve God, God is reducing the reaction to the essential minimum for me to learn a lesson. And so therefore, instead of complaining, I should actually be grateful. It's hard though. I was taking the train from Brussels to Paris like a month ago, and an older gentleman, maybe like 70, sat across from me, and he had just gotten pickpocketed by some, immigrant thieves, who like one tapped him on the shoulder, and while he turned around, the other guy like ran off with his briefcase. And so he was nice man, extremely rich. Like, he showed me pictures of his sport cars and his yacht, and telling me about all his success. And but interestingly enough, he said, I pray to God every time I eat, and I force my children to thank God before every meal, and it's in my will that if my grandchildren don't get baptized, they don't get any of my money. But anyway, so he was going on and on and on complaining, and of course I didn't say this, but in my mind I was like, well, dude, this is, don't complain too much, because you probably stole a laptop from somebody else in your last life. And now you're just, it's payback time. It's payback time. So it's hard, and not that, when we see others getting payback, we shouldn't like, ah ha ha, well, sorry, but hey, it's your karma. That's a very bad strategy to try to get people to come closer to Krishna. When someone is suffering, you don't say, well, hey, it's your karma. When you see someone else suffering, you should say, okay, what's my duty towards this person to make his experience less suffering? What's my dharma in relationship to someone's suffering? How can I help? If there's some, injustice, okay, maybe in one side, one person in the deal is getting his or her karma. But from a objective perspective here, if some sin is being committed or some law is being broken, what is your duty if you have any responsibility or power? Let's say you're a parent or you're a you know, you work for the child protection office, you know, VISCON, or whatever, you're a policeman, you know, what is your duty towards others? Not that we become callous, but when we're thinking about ourselves, then we should think, okay, it's nobody else's fault but mine. Who likes the band Led Zeppelin? It's kind of old, I know, but it was voted the greatest rock and roll band ever. Have you heard of Led Zeppelin even? The gentleman behind you, the young man. You've never heard of the band Led Zeppelin? Robert Plant doesn't... Wow, I'm getting old, Prabhus. I gave a Bhagavad Gita to Robert Plant. You've heard. You're only 25, right? That's Frank Zappa. That's another one. No. 50% of your life is spoiled. So anyway, the reason I mentioned Led Zeppelin is because there's this song where the singer sings, "It's nobody's fault but mine. It's nobody's fault but mine." That's the chorus. It's nobody's fault but mine. And that's exactly what Krishna says in the 13th chapter, verse 21 or 23 of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, you know, with a drummer and a guitarist behind, no, I'm kidding, where Krishna says that the soul, the individual soul, you, me, individually, the soul alone is responsible for his experience of happiness and his experience of suffering. Nobody's fault except your own. It's not because Adam and Eve, you know, bit the apple that we are suffering. I mean, at least we don't accept that. We respectfully, you know, pay respect to Genesis, but that's not our understanding. Our understanding is that we are suffering, first of all, individually, not because of what someone else did, but because of what we did individually. So coming back to this Tathenukampam verse, we have to have the faith that, okay, if I'm suffering, it's nobody else's fault but mine. And actually, if we actually did the math, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that if God was, you know, really going to give you exactly what you deserve karmically, souls would not even be able to breathe. We couldn't even breathe. We'd be so overwhelmed by our karmic reactions. So we hear, you know, God is good, God is very kind. Well, we have to have faith that one way that God is very kind, extremely kind, is that he minimizes the suffering we're supposed to endure when we take shelter of him. So, to finish, and I'm speaking about devotees here, you know, in the room, our salvation, so to speak, our going back to the spiritual world very soon, very probably, you know, after this body, or there's very good chances. I mean, you know, let's not be overly humble, or, I mean, there's nothing, you can't be overly humble, but we can't disregard Krishna's promise in the Bhagavad Gita. We can't disregard Prabhupada's promise. You know, otherwise we would not be faithful. So, and ultimately we don't care, right? Whether we go to Krishna's eternal planet after we die, or next life, or after five lives, or whatever. You know, as a devotee, we'd love to go, but we say, Mama Janmani Janmanishvare. Like, I just want to serve you life after life, my Lord. That's what really counts for me. And you put me wherever you want. But basically, we're in good hands. We believe we're in good hands. We're in Krishna's hands. We're in Srimati Radharani's hands. Even though we're not great Mahatmas, we are souls who have taken shelter of Krishna. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that those Mahatmas, whether, you know, great, great, great Mahatmas, Maha Atma, Maha means great, Atma, soul, or, you know, small little Mahatmas like us, have, you know, we got to give ourselves some credit. We did use our free will to serve Krishna, to take shelter of Krishna. We're under the protection of the divine nature, Krishna says. Daivi Prakriti Ashritaha. Ashritaha means under the protection of Daivi Prakriti, the transcendental nature. And we believe that's none other than Srimati Radharani, the internal pleasure potency of God, you know, personified. So we're in good hands. We're in good hands. So, as I'll always remember, Lila Madhuri, Devi Dasi, in one way I owe her my whole spiritual life. And she told me, when I was a new devotee, like brand new, coming like for the third or fourth time, 1993, Paris, I stopped going because I actually met some Muslim guy at the preaching center. I don't know what he was doing there, a guy from Bangladesh. And he started telling me, actually, this Vaishnavism is nonsense and it's useless. Don't come here. I should have asked, why the heck are you here? But anyway, so I followed kind of his advice. He implanted some doubts in my mind. And so for several weeks, I stopped coming. And I probably would have stopped chanting, you know. If Lila Madhuri, a senior disciple of Bhakti Chagumaraj from France, didn't call me one day. Hello, Bhakta Cyril? And I was like, yeah, it's Lila Madhuri. I was like, uh-huh. And she's like, so why aren't you coming to the center? To the preaching center? We had a preaching center near where I lived. Excuse me. And I said, I opened my heart. I said, look, you know, if Krishna consciousness really is the absolute truth, then why is it that so many few souls are practicing this? It doesn't make sense. It's kind of a good argument. But then she, you know, there's a saying in English, no hold bars, means when you're not at all diplomatic and you just, you know, take a gun and basically explodes one's head, like, you know, with 30, you know, 10 centimeters between you and the person. So she's like, it's obvious that you do not understand our philosophy yet. And then she said, don't you understand that we are all, this whole material world is made up of souls who have rejected God like prisoners in a jail? And so therefore, do you think that in a jail it's logical that you'll have many law-abiding citizens? Obviously not. So don't be surprised that there's not that many, you know, people who are in Krishna consciousness. And she was right. I mean, she's quoting Bhagavad Gita. Manusyanam sahasreshu kaschid yajati siddhaye. In the third chapter of the Gita, Krishna says, out of thousands of men, one may endeavor for perfection. And out of those who have attained perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. Now, that statement is compensated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement, where he predicts, you know, every town and village, everybody will drown in the ocean of love of God. Because we'd like to see that a little bit more in Slovenia. We'd like to maybe see, you know, five centers in Ljubljana instead of one, right? But I think that's all over the world. So, she said this. And then she said something that I'll always remember, and I want to close with this, because I think we can all identify with it. She said, Bhakta Cyril, my name is Cyril, Bhakta Cyril, there's nothing more glorious in life than to go back to the spiritual world, and as you're going there, as you're being pulled there, to bring as many people as you can in your, in French, as they're saying, it's called un sillon. You know when you have a boat, and the boat creates a trace in the back, right? Sort of a rectangular, and it's called the sillon. So she gave this analogy. There's nothing more glorious than as you're going back to the spiritual world, as this is your last life, as you're, you know, the exit life, the last life, you know, the final ovation, the grand finale of your material existence, to bring other souls as much as you can. Come with me. I'm leaving soon. Come. There's nothing more glorious than that. So we have Krishna's protection as long as we are careful and we don't like do crazy things like, you know, I don't know, steal somebody's gamsha or, no, I'm kidding, but, you know, like commit Vaishnava parad, become very injurious, insulting to anybody really. I mean, as long as we behave like gentlemen and gentle ladies, basically, we're in good hands. So therefore, let us pray, let us meditate on providing, on being instruments to provide the protection of the holy name of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, to as many souls that we can meet before we go back home, back to Godhead. Jai. I think it's time. So, I want to thank you personally for having tolerated me all these days. I've never given so many lectures, like morning, evening, morning, evening, morning, evening. And I feel bad for all of you who've had to sit through them. And I thank you for your kindness upon me. And I hope I didn't offend anybody. And if I did, I'm sorry. And I look forward to being in your association again. Thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Krishna's protection ki jai. Harinam Sankirtan ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.